Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 83 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Dakota Happas. He is the CEO and co-owner of Swing Juice. Swing Juice is a fun lifestyle brand for golf and baseball apparel. If you're an avid golfer, you get the term Swing Juice. Swing Juice is the phrase used to loosen yourself up with some drinks if you're having a bad start to the round. Swing Juice initially came to market as a beverage company with that in mind. In 2014, they transitioned the company into a golf-inspired apparel brand. The philosophy was to break the stereotype that golfers are hyper-conservative and stuffy. The majority of golfers out there are out there to have fun, and they wanted their clothing to represent that. In this episode, Dakota shares with us his path of entrepreneurship. He tells us that he's failed at most of his businesses, but he's had success with a few. He shares the early successes and challenges he faced starting different companies and how they go about their marketing. They have 65,000 followers on Instagram. They also landed a deal with the MLBPA, and he tells us what he sees for the future of Swing Juice apparel lines. And be sure to listen to the end, as Dakota shares the advice he'd give someone looking to start their own business, what he would tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week we have Steve Happas. You may also know him as Dakota from Braintree. He's the CEO and co-owner of Swing Juice. How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, Mark? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on Boston's Best. We were just chatting about it. We met over the summertime at Granite Links after I played an awful round of golf. So happy to finally get you on the podcast. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's great. I love impromptu stuff. And, you know, I did have about 40 rounds at Granite Links because it's literally 5 minutes from my office. So it's easy for me to get all my stuff done and get up to Granite Links and play at 1-2 in the afternoon. I meet some very interesting people up there and you happen to be one of them. And we had a good conversation and, you know, that brought us to here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm excited about it. Give us a little background on yourself, though, before we get into the company of Swing Juice.
I'm a local guy. You know, as Mark had mentioned, my name Dakota is not my real name. It's a name that I got through sports radio and poker, because since I'm half Greek, half Armenian, my family grew up playing poker. So as soon as I was able to see over a poker table, I was sitting on a chair playing poker with all my family. So, you know, to me, I graduated from North Quincy High, loved playing baseball in this area. I still actually did up until a few years back until I blew up my arm. And, you know, I always been one to try many different things in life and try a lot of different jobs, sports, whatever it was, just kind of like try everything at least once and find out what you like. And, you know, and did a lot with radio as a caller and sometimes in studio as a host. So, I'm sure over the next 30 or 40 minutes, we'll dive into a bunch of different things, but you know, that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
So when you say as a caller, sports radio, you call in baseball games or?
Yeah. Well, no. So what happened was I went to Bridgewater State University. I think BSC back then. I forget what they call it now.
I did as well. I went to Bridgewater State as well. I think it's Bridgewater State University now, technically.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was college back then. Loved living there. I mean, even though I grew up in Quincy and Braintree, I lived at Bridgewater. Best experience of my life. Lived at Shea Durgan, then Scott Hall. You know, used to try to chase girls at Wood Hall and the whole gamut. So while I was at college, I went for communications, radio, television. I wanted to get into sports broadcasting. And one of my good friends from Quincy was also kind of doing the same thing, going down that career path. And after during college and after he left, he started interning at old 850 AM sports radio in Boston. And back then, sports radio in Boston really wasn't that big. And you had to be just a diehard fan around the early 90s to tune in at, you know, 850 AM WEEI. And he's like, hey, you know what? We have this sports talk show going off and can you call in? We need callers. So I'm just like, all right, if you need me to call in, I'll talk sports since I live it every day and I'll just use a different name. And at the time, I was doing playing some poker in Las Vegas, and the Foxwoods had just opened up.
Yep.
A buddy of mine, when I got out to Vegas, said, don't ever use your real name at the tables out there. Again, early 90s. I didn't know what to believe with all the mafia and everything else, IRS. So I'm like, I'll just use a fake name at the table just in case I win. So that came Dakota. And I started using that as my call-in name of sports radio as Dakota from Braintree. And, you know, here we are 20 or 30 years later. And, you know, there's probably myself and a few other longtime callers that have called into sports radio. So that's how I got into the sports radio. And that kind of jumped off into a general manager that was running Sporting News Radio at the time that was owned by Paul Allen in the early 2000s. He said, you know what? What do you think about doing your own morning show? And I said, yeah, let's do it. You know, I mean, this is 10 years after I got out of school. And I was like, I always wanted to get into sports radio. And so I had my own morning show for a little while on 15:10 a.m. Sporting News Radio, Dakota in the morning. And that, to me, I have no filter. So I said a few things that some people didn't like me saying. And since I was a newbie in the space, they were like, you know what? We got to show you the door. And everything that I said ended up coming was true. But certain people, certain companies didn't want me to out the truth. And they were a lot bigger than I was at the time. And that's what happened. So that's kind of how I got into that whole sports radio thing. So now I still kind of call in every now and then, whether it's on EEI or Sports Hub 98.5. And once in a while, I'll get invited in studio, you know, to do whatever. You know, and it's still on my, you know, my whiteboard that, all right, what are the other things that you continue and want to do in life? And that is, you know, host a sports talk radio.
No kidding. So you essentially just didn't have enough cachet at that time where they had to show you the door. They couldn't let you just say anything you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, the Sporting News Radio at the time, was competing with the other station, WEEI, and, you know, I won't say what team it was, but there's a lot of stuff out in the Google sphere that you can figure it out and stuff. And, you know, I made a few comments and about some rumors that were true. And they just basically told the station that, listen, we don't want him on anymore because I was too much of a lightning rod because I would say anything. I was always a serial entrepreneur. I wasn't trying to do sports radio to make money. I was doing it because I had a passion for it and I loved doing sports radio. So to me, I didn't have much to lose other than that they showed me the door and then I can just go back on. And now as a caller, hey, you know what? I'm just a fan. I can say anything that I want and I hardly ever get censored as a caller. So it kind of gives me the out and I can really kind of voice a lot of my opinions.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. From there to Swing Juice, in between that's kind of led you to Swing Juice?
Oh, man. One of the first things I ever done was, it was a hot dog vendor in Fenway Park. You know, has a passion for sports. Yep. So I wanted to get, you know, to me as a young kid, I wanted to be as close to the field as I could and had dreams about playing someday. And I was fortunate at the time that Harry M. Stevens, the manager in Fenway, knew of a guy that used to run Harry M. Stevens in Fenway that moved to Houston. My mother grew up with him and mom's like, well, I know this guy in Houston at the Astrodome. I'm aging the situation right now, but this was the Astrodome way back when.
Yeah.
He's like, well, why don't you talk to him and say, hey, you want to be a vendor? And because he runs Harry M. Stevens in the Astrodome. So he put a call in. I went in and interviewed and got hired at 14 years old as a vendor and showed up a couple of hours before each game and started off selling popcorn. I think they start you off popcorn or Coke. And Coke was a disaster because trying to run up and down the stairs with Coke with a little plastic film on the top was a disaster because I'd always spill it all over the place.
Yeah.
At least with popcorn, it was light. You could get in and out. And I'm not a big guy. So carrying these things, you know, as a 14-year-old in the stands, whether it's 20 degrees or like 95 to 100 degrees, it was a pretty good experience. So I don't know, that kind of job just set me off in a way that the effort that you put into something, not only from an hours, but how hard you work, as well as being smart. Yeah. And I'll use it, you know, because you can work hard and not make a lot of money or not be good at what you do.
Oh, totally.
And what I mean about trying to work hard and being smart is, well, as a hot dog vendor or a popcorn vendor, you need to know of the other 100 vendors, where they are, what they're selling, where they just came from. So as soon as you come out of the concourse, my eyes were always like this. All right, where do I only see anybody? I have popcorn today. Did anybody go in that section? I'm like, you know what? Right field is not sold out. Nobody's in the bleachers because the bleacher vendor station's closed. I'm just going to bust my ass, go out into the bleachers, run, and I'll be the only one out there selling. So it's just like that, trying to be smart and not going down certain aisles. And, you know, if you have hot dogs, just trying to do things a little bit different. And I got in trouble one time. I moved my way up to selling ice cream. And remember those little ice cream sports bars that used to have? Yeah. And now, you know, Red Sox game are sold out. They've got the sweets. They've got the they put at that time seats above the sweets and everything. I think there was up there. I don't know. My mind starts to go a little bit as you get older. But I remember I'm like, Jesus, my ice cream sales are down today and this place is jammed and it's hot. So I'm at the third base line walking down the main strip and I'm looking up and I played baseball. So I had a strong arm. So a lot of people, and you see it, that they'll take whatever they can, whether it's peanuts, and they'll throw them. Because when you throw something, everybody's eyeballs see it and they're like, oh, I want that, because they're with their little kid and they're like, hey, dad, can you get me some peanuts? And the dad's going to be like, all right, I'll get you peanuts and I'll catch them for you. Right.
Yeah.
So by throwing things, you attracted eyeballs. And if you attracted eyeballs, that means they buy more off of me, more commission to me. Again, work hard, but be smart. And so I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, I have a good arm. And I'm looking up there and I see some, I forget who it was or how old they were, but somebody in the suites going, hey, up here, because they saw me throw an ice cream like from the bottom side into like the front row of the grandstand. And what you do is the vendors, like if you're a peanut vendor, you're not going to really hurt anybody with peanuts. You would stand there and you would just go do, do, do. And then you'd walk up the aisle. They pass down the cash.
Right.
So to me, I'm like, huh, you think I can reach up there with this ice cream bar? It's frozen. Right. They're hard. And, you know, I just make sure I'm not going to hit anybody. So what I did was I took the ice cream and I started throwing it up into one of the suites. Well, obviously it was a perfect hit. They caught it. Everybody else now started wanting ice cream right up into the suites. So now I'm standing there and I'm just chucking ice creams left and right into all the suites. Of course, that got me in trouble because one, people didn't want that competition. Now I was like showing off, and you know, the other vendors didn't like that because everybody just wanted to buy an ice cream off of me. And it was a little unfair. So they told me, if you ever throw any more ice creams up into the upper deck, you're fired.
Wow.
You know, so I don't know how we got there, but that was kind of the first foray into, like, you know, being a serial entrepreneur, trying to think on your feet. And if you're going to get involved with something, how do you work hard, but be smart doing it? From there, I got into a lot of different things. I'm a risk taker at heart. So I always wasn't afraid, since I always liked working hard and trying to make money. You know, I made sure I like lived at home. So any money I made, I could kind of put in my pockets. So if I ever wanted to take chances in anything, I could always do that. So I did live at home for a while, probably until the mid-20s, where now I think people are living at home a little bit older than that. But and maybe it's even going to go to 40 or 50. Who knows what's going on in today's society. That was pretty much it. That's how it started, you know, my thought process when it got to being involved in different ideas, different work, and, you know, swing juice. I'm a big avid golfer. To me, swing juice was one of those terms that come out of golf. Like, so if you're on the golf course and you're tight and you can't hit and you got a little money on the line, you know, they always say, yeah, you need some swing juice. And
absolutely.
Get like a vodka tonic or iced tea, you know, with rum or whatever it might be. And that's where swing juice kind of came out of. And a friend of mine back in the day started Swing Juice as a beverage company, trying to get into the energy space way back in the 2000s. And, you know, from knowing what I know now, knowing what he knows, trying to compete in the beverage space is on your own is pretty much the hardest thing to do in the world.
Oh, totally.
You know, and there's a lot of companies that have a very high barrier of entry. That's one of them. So to be successful, I think, you know, you have any money, you can go get anything printed and put out there, but being successful is a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate over the years to try a lot of different things and fortunately have a good business partner that we built other successful businesses that do give us opportunities to invest and take chances in other companies.
Yeah.
So, you know, my friend that originally started Swing Juice as a beverage company came to me about 3-4 years ago and says, hey, can you help me out? You know, I have this vision. It's got a great name, and which I agree. And I agree with it. And I'm saying, you know what? I go, you just need, you know, the infrastructure, marketing help and everything else under the sun. Let's do a rebrand. Let's start getting into on the golf course stuff like real polos, like high-end wear, not just from t-shirts that we have. You know, which was the brand before. It was just beverage and kind of t-shirt, cool designs, which was great. He did everything from a grassroots standpoint. But, you know, for any business to be successful, there's always going to be, you know, resistance along the way. And I really think you need a team of experienced people in a lot of different ways to get you through that. So I didn't plan on getting into it. It kind of just kind of happened. But once I'm in it, I'm all full blown, where my whole closet is all about Swing Juice, testing out material, talking to different people. 23 hours of the day, my mind is on Swing Juice, trying to figure out, you know, how do we take this brand that was started a long time ago by John Mason, if anybody's watching this and knows him, you know, and his vision of being, you know, this not stuffy type of golf brand. Yeah. And that's kind of what we are. We're a fun lifestyle apparel brand, you know, for golf. We wanted to get into other sports, and then Major League Baseball Players Association reached out to us a couple of years ago and said, hey, we like what you're doing with the themes and everything, with not being stuffy. And maybe there's something you can do with the players. And so we signed a licensing agreement with the MLBPA.
No way.
And you can see some of the stuff on the back hanging up, like the Xander Bogaerts shirt, Mookie Betts. So like they're just like cool designs of the different players. So we take like kind of the players and get their theme. Mookie Betts, you guys know, Boston Red Sox, loves bowling. 300s in his game, you know. So, you know, we took the theme of Mookie Betts as a bowler, you know, going to Hollywood, you know. Wow. So it's stuff like that that we incorporate with a lot of the Major League Baseball players. And that's kind of got us moving, you know, in parallel with golf. And we're starting to do a lot more things with baseball as well as our brand. We're not in the uniform side of things, where it's a little bit different. Golf, you can make polos for it, work with colleges on polos and everything. Baseball's a little bit different. So baseball will be more of you know, ancillary stuff, lifestyle stuff, not more of the performance.
Wow. You know, yeah, so, I had no idea you were involved with MLBPA. That's amazing.
Yeah, Jose Cruz Jr., if you know the name, he actually followed Swing Juice, is a big time golfer. And he just reached out to us one day and says, hey, I'm working for the Players Association. You know, here's what I'm thinking. I think you guys will be good for us. And,
wow,
you know, we didn't know anything. We had no distribution. It's not like with golf, it's a little bit different, but you know, the hardest thing is doing it, executing it is one thing, but you know, becoming profitable and growing it is another.
Yeah.
You know, so this is going to be our second year now launching the MLBPA stuff. And, you know, we learned a lot in year one, and now we're trying to put some things together from a distribution standpoint that we can really, you know, reach that audience. Some of the players, you know, started wearing them later in the season, which was good. A lot, actually, a lot of times it's not the players that will wear them. It's their teammates that will get them and go, oh, this is funny or cool. And they'll wear them. We have a few of the Red Sox ones, the Kike Hernandez that some of the players had worn. We have, you know, the Xander Bogaerts one, which is kind of a playoff of the X-Men. That one above me over here. Alex Verdugo, we have one like a Teach Me How to Doogie, you know, for Alex Verdugo. And I think his wife or his girlfriend, I'm not sure if he's married, but she had it on during the celebration when they went to the playoffs and everything.
Oh, no way. So,
yeah, it's been pretty cool. So it's a different experience, you know, a little bit different than golf, but it's something that we're just trying to do to continue to build, you know, the Swing Juice brand.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how big of a transition, how difficult was it? Because Swing Juice initially, you said it was going to go into the beverage space. And now you guys are in apparel space. What year was that, first of all? And then how big of a, how difficult was that transition to make to try to get into the apparel space? Just the whole rebrand, you know?
You know what? I'm the believer of if I couldn't do it myself, I'd have to figure it out. And if I couldn't figure it out well, I just hire people that know the space.
Yeah.
So once I got involved with Swing Juice, we started hiring people that were at our fingertips that, you know, could handle the sourcing side, could handle the, you know, the wholesale side, you know, like, so we, you know, that's the first thing to do. It's, you know, it's like the Belichick approach, right? I think the reason that Belichick is so good is the people that he hires, right? They're good coaches. They know what they're doing. Yeah. And I think in any business, you have to be open that you have to understand what you don't know, because if you think you can figure it all out, you're going to fail. Yeah. So the first thing was, okay, if we're going to do something in the apparel space, it's one thing just to do t-shirts, but it's another thing now, do we want to do performance polos, right?
Yeah.
We're starting to create our own line of golf joggers right now. I love them. I played in so I can't wait for those. They're going to be coming out hopefully in maybe before the summertime. So we're starting to like get in, not just from head to above the belt, but you know, head all the way down, and maybe get into the cleat side of it. But we'll probably just do more of a collaboration with one of the foot makers once we get down there. So, you know, it's exciting taking a brand, a consumer brand, and, you know, trying to grow it. It's so funny now over the past year that we started doing a lot more marketing, where now I'll see Swing Juice randomly and I'll get people send me, hey, I'm on this flight to Hawaii. Somebody has a Swing Juice hat on. You know, we'll get randomness is, and that's what's great. You know, that makes you feel like the efforts that you're doing are hitting home. When now, you know, I was up at Granite Links and I saw somebody wear a Swing Juice hat, and I just had a conversation with them. I didn't tell them who I was, just started talking with them. Hey, what do you think? Oh, I said, I love the brand. The hat's cool. I wish I had this more, this and that. And I'm like, you know, and then I tell them and they're like, oh my God, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for people to wear the stuff, and then, you know, asking them, you know, how they find it, you know, what do they like, what do they don't like about it? Because to me, it's all about, you know, how the consumer resonates to the brand. You know, my brother's an avid golfer too, and he's all into like golf apparel, all the golfers. The first thing I do of anything, I'm like showing him, I'm like, hey, you like this?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How have you guys gone about marketing? Like, what's been the most successful way you've gone about it so far? Is it just social media, or is there something more to it?
Yeah, pretty much just social media. You know, we'll do a lot on Facebook. Instagram, we have, I think, around 70,000 followers on Instagram. So
that was
a good place to start. And, you know, the marketing business that I have for some of the other companies, we never did e-commerce. So I really didn't have the experts in-house to do e-commerce sales. So that's been one where, you know, we've had a learning curve.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking to outside agencies for help on that. And, you know, so most of it's just Facebook, Instagram. We'll do some Snapchat. TikTok is going to be, I think, something really good for us.
Yeah.
TikTok is going to be big for brands. I think it already is now. And it's somewhere where we want to focus. You know, I have done some stuff on radio in the Boston market, some 30-second videos as well in the back of Ubers and Lyfts and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just a matter of trying to figure out what works, you know, and where the audience it hits. You know, we're at a disadvantage, I think, being in Boston, because we can only golf 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
Most of the people that buy our stuff, they're in Florida. They're in Texas, they're in Cali, you know, Arizona. Then the next major move is the green grass stuff, you know, in the golf courses itself. So we want to focus. So when, if you walk into Granite Links or any of the local golf courses, they carry our Swing Juice stuff.
Oh, and, got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, or even, you know, the Dick's Sporting Goods, the PGA Superstores, you know, that's the next level. We're starting to get inroads right now. I think we're in over 50 locations, more, a lot of the Scheels department stores that are more Midwest. So it's a process. It's, you know, takes, I think, about 2 to 3 years to actually do this.
Yeah.
And get into the big box retailers. That's what we're finding out. Next week, we're going to be at the PGA show in Orlando, and that's going to be our first show. So we'll have all our merchandise on the floor. So all the buyers at all these big boxes, if they like what we have, like the golf and hip hop design that we have, you know, with the headphones, and the golf ball in the middle.
Yes, that's,
you
know, cool.
So we have all these custom stuff. And one that I think that you'll like, I don't think any golfer wouldn't like this, but everybody knows the term press.
Yeah.
So if you're down two holes in a match, you know, you're going to press. So
you're going to press. Absolutely.
You know, so we've got to, you know, we'll come up with these cool designs and put them on polos and then see how they sell. And if the audience really likes them, you know, we'll just keep doing it.
Do you guys have like a bestseller, something that sells consistently the best, or is it kind of a little bit of everything?
It's interesting. The way I look at bestsellers is, you have to look at your organic traffic, like non-advertising, because if you advertise one thing, that's what's going to attract and they're going to buy that. You know, since we're still trying to grow our organic side, word of mouth side, you know, we'll try to look at what colors or what type of styles more of selling best. We used to have like that golf and hip hop up there, that logo on just a t-shirt, but golf and hip hop on gray. And what we did was, because a lot of people liked it, we launched it in different styles. So we put it on hoodies, then we changed the colors. Yeah. And now we've got the golf and hip on poles. So we'll take some of the designs, like even golf and tacos, golf and pizza that we have, or the press that work well on t-shirts, we'll throw them in the polos and et cetera, quarter zips. So, we'll come up with some new designs that hopefully will be bestsellers.
Yeah.
Like these ones aren't on the site yet. They just got delivered. They'll be live next week. So hoodies on the golf course are starting to be the thing.
They are.
So these are our new performance golf hoodies, and we'll have four colors of these either live next week or the week after on the site.
Yeah, I like those. I don't have anything like that up to this point. I like those. Those are nice because most hoodies are, you know, big and bulky, but that's nice.
Yep. And we're going to have a jogger with this material too. And I might have mentioned this when I met you, I would never sell anything that I wouldn't wear. Okay.
Yeah.
Since I golf, I played, I think, 80 rounds last year.
Oh my God.
So to me, I'm in golf attire every day. I'm coming wearing golf attire to the office, getting everything I need done, and then hopefully getting to a golf course, weather permitting, and I've got nothing else going on in the afternoon. And I wanted to make sure that the quality of what we were selling was top notch. Yeah. So you can't go to Puma, you can't go to Adidas, you can't go to Travis Matthews and they can say, you know what? Their quality is better. Our quality rivals them, if not better. Wow. And I didn't mind. I wanted to go in that direction because I think where the golf community is going, they want to know that from a performance standpoint, it's going to hold up.
Yeah.
And if you remember during the summer, we had a run of like 95, 98 degrees days. It was super hot out. And I had just got our performance polos because it was our first year of actually the polos. And when I tell you, and I posted some of these videos even on my Twitter, these held up in the heat. Unbelievable. I knew that they were the right polos. Like I didn't even have to question material and stuff like that to go back to the drawing board. And it was good. So, you know, it's just a fun experience. You know, a lot of the stuff I'll get sent to me as a trial and say, hey, what do you think? Do you like this? Or let's recreate this. And I don't like it. I'm just like, forget it. You know, like I'm getting vests. I'm looking at, you know, zip up vests all the time. And I need to really enjoy it and, you know, like the quality before we put something out. So hopefully we'll be, you know, everything that you want on and off the golf course will end up having.
Sounds like,
no equipment though.
No equipment. You haven't gotten to see the equipment space?
No, it's too difficult.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe license the name or something, you know?
Oh, for sure. That's always an option. Yeah.
And if we ever get back into the beverage side of it, you know, I thought, you know, 3 years ago, it was on the roadmap. I met with a lot of the big alcohol makers, you know, whether it was rum, tequila, and it was going to be a big undertaking. So if I did want to get back into like the lemonades and vodkas or whatever,
yeah,
I would just license the name to one of them, you know?
Yeah, I mean it's a really good branding name from especially like the drinking perspective. People are out on the golf course, like I need some swing juice when they hit the turn. Oh, there's something made by swing juice here. I mean, it's just like, you know. So I mean, there's a lot of clothing companies in the golf apparel industry. Why do you think you guys have done? You get 70,000 followers on Instagram. You've seemed to do pretty well. Why do you think you've been so successful to this point?
I just think that we're average Joes. You know, and the brand is non-stuffy and we're trying to do things cutting edge and, you know, have funny different things. And people, you know, the audience for golf that we go after is not that hardcore golfer type A individual. It's not, you know, like they're going to want everything prim and proper and buy, I think, a brand that is them. They're stuffy. Right. Yeah. So, but that's not all the golfers. Most of the golfers, they want to
like
make
me. They I'm a 20 handicap, brother. Like
there you go, right.
Most people are like me.
You're our perfect target demo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, like I think playing bad, I mean, we even have a shirt of an offshoot of breaking par And I said, no, you know what? Not many people can break par, you know, with the breaking par. I wish I had one here, but it was golfing bad. So instead of breaking bad, we did a golfing bad one because most people golf bad. And then like the two, the elements on it were added up to like 105 because that's golfing bad. That's your score. So I think it's just stuff like that, that when people put it on, we want them to feel relaxed. And if they are relaxed, they can either enjoy themselves a little bit better and not worry about it. And maybe it's a conversational piece too. I mean, nowadays in the designer t-shirts, it's all about conversation starters. You know, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. Where'd you get it? You 100%. Know, like I didn't even know. So like, here's Mike Trout, right?
Yeah.
Now we're from Boston. We don't follow Anaheim that closely, but because we did a Mike Trout, if you follow the Anaheim Angels and Mike Trout, you would think he's fascinated with the weather. And on Instagram, on Anaheim's account, every game, Mike Trout's there. It's going to be 85 and sunny. Like he's always talking about the weather, like how good it is. I never knew that.
I didn't either.
So this is the stuff that, you know, happens that, you know, we can bring now to the public. So it's a conversation piece. It's funny. It ties in with them. And this is just so funny. And I never even knew it until John. And John does a lot of most of our themes and from the design standpoint. And I never knew that. And but, you know, if you really look, and a lot of people didn't know it either. And this is one of our, actually talk about bestsellers. This is one of our bestsellers. Trout's obviously great. But, you know, I just think that ties in perfect with, you know, the theme of the, you know, the mission with the players and everything. So,
yeah, I mean, it's cool. Cause you guys are going after the right clientele, right? Cause like majority of the people that golf, they enjoy golf, but they're not good. I mean, you know, I went out, I mean, I probably got like 30 rounds in last year. I was probably played about once a week. And I know I said I'm a 20 handicap. That's an improvement from the beginning of last year. But
so you're a 20 handicap with mulligans or the,
no mullies. I just straight 20 handicap. I never really played too much before like a year and a half ago. I belong to the Framingham Country Club. Yeah, it's a nice track, but I never really played too much. And, you know, I just like getting out there and like I'm your target demographic. You know, like I want to get better. I'm trying
to. Do you own any swing juice gear? Did I ever send you any or did you buy any?
No, I have not. So I'll have to become a new customer.
Yeah, well, go on the site and let me know what you like and I'll send you one of them. Okay. And then from there, you can become a customer. So I'll use it as a loss leader.
Okay. But by me wearing one of those shirts out there, I'll be able to help promote you guys. So
there you go. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like you're hitting to the right demographic. Like that's funny to me. Like all the guys I play with, like, because I always want to be really good at stuff. And I was just telling my buddy, I'm just like, I'm not good. It's very frustrating. He's like, Mark, you play like once a week. You're going to have to play like probably 3 or 4 times a week if you want to get like consistently good. And he's like,
100%.
And he's like, how many people do you know that are actually good at golf? I'm like, oh, that's fair. I'm like, but when I like tee up with like a random 2 or 3 guys from the Framingham Country Club, and these guys are like 4 handicaps, and you know, I feel like an idiot when I'm out there with them. He's like, yeah, nobody cares. I'm like, no, nobody really cares. But you know, it's still, I just want to.
Are they really 4 handicaps? That's what I love. So I'll gamble on the course all the time.
Yeah.
And people say to me, there are 5 and this and that. And I'm just like, all right, we'll see. We'll gamble on it. And you know what? I can just say, you know what, boy, they have no idea. You don't want to be a 5 if you're not a real 5, you know,
because
you're giving strokes most of the time and you're going to lose money.
Oh, totally. You know?
Whenever my index is low, I lose money because you have to play better than your index. And it's very hard to do, but the index is there to kind of level the playing field.
100%. Yeah, no, because we all pull up like our gin handicaps as we're doing stuff. And like a lot of the guys out there are sub 10 and it's just like, they're all single digits, but you know, I go on a run with like 3 or 4 pars in a row and I'm winning some holes off of them, you know, cause I'm getting a stroke or two, depending on the hole. I birdied a 5 and I was getting like 2 strokes like one day. It was just, it was like a 4 net too. It was ridiculous.
I played in a tournament at Marshfield and we got paired up with a guy who was a +1. So on the par 3, he had actually had a stroke. It was the funniest thing in the world.
That's wild. That's wild. So, all right. So let's get back into swing juice. So you guys have gotten into the MLB. Like, what do you see for the future of swing juice as the years continue? You had mentioned, you know, maybe a collaboration with, you know, with the cleats, you get into the pants. Like, what do you see for the future?
You know, it's a really good question. And I think I really want to figure out how this can be successful in, you know, not just online. You know, online is just a function of good marketing, good organic, yeah. You know, good video and stuff like that. So, but it's really the brick and mortar side, okay. You know, to me, because if you can really figure that out where people can touch and feel it, it's a yeah. different type of experience than buying something online. Most of the times that people are buying, you don't run to, if you've never worn a Puma polo before, you're not often going to just go to puma.com, right?
Right.
And buy it without knowing how it's going to fit you and how yeah. it feels. Yeah. So, you know, we're doing things in reverse. We're online and then trying to get the inroads into brick and mortar. So the more that we can scale up, whether it's in green grass in the golf courses, or if it's at Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, people can then touch the brand. Then they can go online, see more offerings and stuff like that. So that's kind of like where really we want to go with it. Plus, I believe that joggers are going to be the next big thing in golf.
Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of wanted to get ahead of the curve and kind of maybe Swing Juice can be the place for golf joggers. You know, we're certainly not the first. There are, you know, Puma, Nike, they have golf joggers, but there's not a lot of options, right? Because yeah. they're not sure of the category yet. Right. I believe it's going to go that way. I enjoy playing in golf joggers. It's comfortable. Then after you're done, you go to the 19th hole, whether at Granite Links or whatever, out to eat. They're so comfortable and they're yeah. upscale that you can wear them out. You know, that's kind of like the biggest next thing kind of look at, you know, what else can we get into for different styles,
yeah.
you know, that just happen, and maybe even get into the accessories. So we're looking to get into accessories as well for head covers.
Okay.
And all that. So
that's cool. Nice, man. So I think I know the answer to this question just based on our conversation up to this point, because you're involved in a couple other companies as well, but I always ask people this question. So I'd be curious about yourself.
Yeah.
Outside of being like physically or mentally incapable of working, do you ever picture yourself 100% just retiring and never working again?
Thought about it quite a bit, only because getting up there in age, and I'm like, well, what happens if I had a successful exit, you know, out of yeah. the company, right? And
yeah.
you know, we're building these companies, you know, to hopefully have an exit and financially yeah. you can be set and then pass it on to your kids and et cetera. So, I mean, I have thought about it, and I think I'll probably never retire. I'll just try something that I'm able to do at that time to do something that I really wanted to spend more time in doing.
Yeah.
You know, like I always wanted to run like a hedge fund or be a trader, you know, in the stock market.
Oh,
I
nice.
Do it passively. Every now and then I fool around, but it's not anything that you can do passively. I really think it needs to yeah. be like a full-time gig.
Yeah.
And so I think if I was to ever, you know, have like a successful exit retiree, I'd probably want to just like position trade or hedge fund trade or stuff
that's
like
cool.
that. Because then you could do it passively as well.
Right.
Like you do it full time, but passively still
yeah.
be able to play golf and
yeah.
keep an eye on the market and lose any money. So, I don't know. I'm type A when it comes to working, and my mind always needs to go. And that's part of the problem with, I think, having your hand in a lot of different things at any given time. I may be working on three or four different things. And you know what? I never thought it was, you know, much of an issue, but you watch Shark Tank, I'm probably sure. And
love Shark Tank.
Mark Cuban talks about it all the time, how he hates doing business with entrepreneurs is because the entrepreneur is an entrepreneur. They're not about running a business.
Right.
So I have that conundrum where I'm an entrepreneur, but I also have to run a business. So I just need to make sure I surround myself with the right people that can run the business
yeah.
while I can still do the entrepreneurial stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So to me, I think because that's my mind, I'm always going to want to keep, you know, banging my head against the wall, trying to figure something out and
yeah.
hand it off maybe to someone.
Yeah. You know? No, that's fair. That makes sense. Like, I feel like I always have my hand in something. I get bored. Like, I very much enjoy golf. But even golf, you know, that's 4 to 5 hours, you know, for a round, right? So you still have a whole day left to figure out what else you want to do. So you could day trade in the afternoon, first half of the day, and then you can hit the rounds, you know, in the afternoon. It's not yeah. a bad retirement plan.
Often I thought about moving to Vegas and just the market closes at 1 o'clock out there. I then golf else in the afternoon, right?
That's so, right. They're 3 hours behind us.
My mind works. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Maybe if I go to Hawaii, right? Now I'm even there earlier in the day if I was going to be a trader. You know,
you'd be done at 10 a.m. out there.
I know. I'd have a complete day. But, you know, I used to play a lot of poker, live poker, tournament poker, and I never played golf. I just played poker for 20 years. And I'm talking, I'd play anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week. I'd fly and play tournaments in the World Series of Poker, the WPT events. And then after I stopped playing baseball, I blew up my arm. I picked up golf. I stopped playing poker. Like, I have no desire to play poker anymore because I think the self-competitiveness that golf is always challenging. You have your own index. Your goal, if you're a 20, what's your goal? To get maybe to 15 by 15. The end, right?
Next summer, it's 15. This coming summer, my goal is to get down to 15.
Yeah. And in poker, it's like, all right, I got to cash. I got to win tournaments. Like, it's self, even though there's other players involved, there's that mechanism of self-competitiveness that comes out. And at least golf does that for me, which sucks because I used to love poker. You know, and I don't play any poker anymore because when I'm sitting in a tournament and I'm like, oh, I got to sit here for day one for 12 hours. Tomorrow, it's going to be 85 degrees out and I'm going to have to come back for day two and then may not even make the money. I say, screw it. I'm just going to go to the golf course for 2 days. And play golf. Exactly. That's my mindset. Yeah, you know?
That's fair. That's fair, man. All right, man. So last few questions I ask every guest on Boss's Best, the first of which is, if someone's looking to start their own business, what's the first piece of advice you would give them?
Most of the success that we've had with the companies in the online dating space, I helped run a company we sold to Match.com. I worked for IAC Corp for a little bit. On my marketing company, we built to facilitate customer acquisition for the entire online dating space. So all my clients are Match Group's clients, Spark Networks, eHarmony, et cetera. And I used to speak at the iDate conferences every year in Miami. And I would open basically my monologue or whatever you want to call it, going that, all right, who's here to start their own dating site? And everybody's in there like this. I'm like, all right, here's what you want to do. If you were going to put $500,000 in it, give me $250,000 and put $250,000 back in your pocket because you have no chance on being successful in the space. I think everybody's crazy to try to start their own thing and do it because the success rate on any business is low. I've had more failures than I've had successes.
Yeah.
And you have to basically lightning strikes the shithouse, be at the right situation at the right time to have your business be successful.
Yeah.
It takes the perfect storm to take a business and be successful. And I know because most everything I do fails except one or two.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's my opinion. I get a lot of people that will pitch me their ideas or, hey, I have this new dating app. And I'm like, no, that's it. And I've only invested in one other company that's came to me in the dating space. And it's basically gamified dating, a company called Jigsaw Dating. They started in the UK and it's all puzzle based. So after you message them back and forth, pieces of the puzzle reveal their face. So it's something
interesting,
different than mainstream online dating. And so to me, I know it's probably not the answer you wanted because this is about entrepreneurs and business, but that's just me being honest.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm always curious. Your episode, I think 83, you know, and I've had 83 different answers. So
has anybody said don't do it?
Nope. Nobody. You're the first that said it. So
here we go.
All right. So second to last question. If you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell him?
My 18-year-old self. Wow. That is a tough question. What would I tell my 18-year-old self? Probably to listen to my parents. And my uncles, my aunts, a little bit more, that I was probably too pigheaded to understand what the future was going to be, you know, ahead of me.
Yeah.
You know, I think whatever it was, you just think that you know best.
Yeah.
When you're 18. You know, I grew up a lot later in life where I realized that it's important to have mentors. And, you know, early on, after a lot of failures, I ended up meeting John Alm, who was the former chairman and CEO of Coca-Cola Enterprises. And I met John through the poker community and we played poker together. And he was an investor in a few of the things that I did. And, you know, he didn't mind failures, but he was always good. He kept you level headed. Yeah. So I think early, if I could tell my 18-year-old self one thing, is to try to find mentors a lot earlier in life and listen to them because they know from experience. And that's probably the most important thing, because I probably wasted 20 years of thinking I knew what I knew and I didn't know what I thought I knew.
I think that's a great answer, because at 18, like, you think you know everything, right? You just graduated high school, but you're really just focusing on girls or boys, you know, that's all 18-year-old kids are focusing on at this time. And they think they know everything. And it's just, it's all life experience that you've had up to 18. So you don't really, you know, mentor, I think, is a really good piece of advice. So last question, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how do you define success?
Oh, man, I think success is just trying to accomplish one, the original goal. But again, the goalpost is always going to move where, you know, when I was starting the marketing company, we said, all right, if we get to this much in revenue, that's a success for us. And then we got there and it's like, well, we can do so much more.
Yeah.
You know what? I really don't. Honestly, I don't know. I think from a success standpoint means that if you're going to take risks in life and be a serial entrepreneur and you're going to have a family and you have responsibilities to them to make sure and committed, I think that's what success is, you know, being able to provide and make sure that you can guide, you know, whether it's your siblings or your children or relationships that you develop. To me, that is more successful. Like, and now, like I said, I've been fortunate to have some successes. To me, success is almost like helping other people with their ideas and creating them, you know? So that's my success.
That's awesome.
So I think success is always going to move.
Yeah.
But just get little wins. Like I always said to myself, oh, when I get to a certain point, I'm going to buy a Rolex, and I hate watches. And I probably would have bought maybe 20 Rolexes by now, but I've always moved my own goalpost.
Yeah.
You know, I have a bottle of Dom Perignon in a case from MySpace. Old MySpace gave it to me because we spend so much money with them. And this is what I was working for another company. And I always said, all right, well, when I do this and accomplish and I make this much in a year, I'm going to finally open up that Dom Perignon that the MySpace people get. And I still have it open. And my goal, it just always moves. So I think success always changes.
Yeah.
You know, and it evolves. And I'm glad that way, because you know what? If I already said I was successful, I'd be like, I'd probably lose that urge to keep trying and
the desire. You know,
still trying to do different things. I mean, within our company, I'll do everything from the bottom to the top. Like there isn't anything that I won't get my hands dirty, much like a manager or an owner in a restaurant business, right?
Yeah.
You always see them like cleaning tables. Like, where's the busboy? Well, the busboy's busy over there. They're cleaning tables.
Yeah.
So I think to me, that's what makes me happy. That's what drives me helping, you know, having a hand in a lot of different things.
That's awesome, man. I love it. Dakota, thank you very much for coming on Boston's Best to chat about Swing Juice and just your entire career. I really appreciate the time.
Well, it was great meeting you, and thank you for inviting me on.
Absolutely,
this was great. I had a lot of fun. And time went by so quick. I think that was almost 50 minutes to an hour anyways.
So, yeah, hey, that was an easy conversation. So thanks again, brother.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.